Thank you very much, Ms. Dye. Meeting is now called to order. This is the discussion session. It is September the 9th, 1 p.m. We are being audio recorded. And Mr. McCain had notified us that he is going to be a few minutes late, so we're going to go ahead and get started. I'm going to go past the superintendent's search timeline. I'm going to go straight to litigation matters and processing invoices. We've already discussed this once before, but I just think we need to bring it forward one more time, if we could, please. And that is, and Dr. Adams, I did mention this to you, so it's no surprise that it's on the agenda. We have given direction that once we have taken a position on having a particular lawsuit, following through or whatever we happen to be doing on it, whatever the direction of the board corporate is, that every time there is an invoice, we don't have to go back and we may at one time have two issues that we're dealing with, but they are two separate things, and under your policy, I believe it was the board corporate's decision that those are to be considered separately under your $50,000 ceiling that you have. So I know we've talked about this before, but I just felt it needed to be revisited. Needed to be revisited for board discussion regarding the direction of the board. I mean, do we want to continue with what we have done in the past, or do we want to make changes so that every bill that comes in has to come before us for approval, even though we may have said let's pursue this particular case? So I'm opening that up. I told Dr. Adams that this probably needs to come before the board.
Can I just clarify?
Yes, please.
Okay. In terms of invoices, and I'm going to use CWA and IRC as an example, because we use the same attorney for both. It falls under, so let's use Mr. Helsby as an example, because we have actually had to bring it back to the board. You have given me up to $50,000 authority to take any invoices up to that point, so I don't have to bring it back to the board. But once I exceed that, I have to bring that back. But it's for Mr. Helsby, regardless of what he's working on. Okay, so it's not 50 for CWA and 50 for IRCEA, it's 50 for that firm. And then if it exceeds that, I bring that back.
Okay, well, that is the question, and that is what you and I talked about, mm-hmm. was that if we have, with Mr. Helsby, I can't use him as an example. All right, yes, I can. If Mr. Helsby is working on CWA and IRCEA, mm-hmm.
Two different matters.
Negotiating mm-hmm. Things. That is considered under one. If he is working on a teacher, say something that a teacher, mm-hmm.
Termination.
They are considered as two separate things. So it wouldn't be $50,000 because of Mr. Helsby. It would be $50,000 and $50,000. Is that not correct?
My understanding is it's $50,000 for a firm.
Or a consultant.
Or anybody. Okay. I have authority up to $50,000, and then I bring it back to the board for consideration.
Well, I apologize. That's my misunderstanding, and I'm glad that I did.
Is that your understanding as well?
Because I thought once we gave direction to pursue a lawsuit, that it was $50,000 per lawsuit.
Well, if we are in a lawsuit and it exceeds that, I would want to come back to the board to say it's exceeding $50,000, but we're in the middle of a lawsuit, so I'm confident.
But you're talking about a lawsuit.
I'm talking
about not a firm. I'm talking about a lawsuit. I'm talking about Ms. DiAgresta, who is pursuing two different lawsuits. It's my understanding that it was $50,000 is your purview under each lawsuit. They didn't start at the same time. They weren't handed to you at the same time. Those are two different issues. So this is why the board needs to have discussion. Mm-hmm. Thank you very much.
Okay. In the terms of procurement, and this is my understanding, so I kind of feel it's the same road you're going down. In terms of procurement, let's not use litigation, but I would mm-hmm. say it would be same as procurement.
Right.
And I'll just use, I hate to use the vendor Proctor, but we'll use the vendor Proctor. If Proctor mm-hmm. is installing playgrounds for this and it exceeds 50, okay, that's a separate incident. Then Proctor, who happens to be the same vendor, and now we're going to put in a driveway at the mm-hmm. Rosewood. So although we're using lawsuits, I, you know, or CWA versus the teachers union. I think the spirit of what we're going for is the same thing. And I'm wondering if that's what we were all thinking.
That's what I'm hearing.
That's what I was thinking.
I just wanted to clarify. So there was
Yes,
Ms. That would be true. I don't argue that. And both of those come before the board.
And both of those
are approval.
from the same firm.
That's correct.
Okay, so then I think what we need to make sure, because you've talked about, you've made the distinction between a firm, in this case, a vendor. Mm-hmm. And then you gave the perfect example of a vendor providing different services. So maybe when we look at our, I don't know if this is in writing, in policy, or our procedures, it needs to be specified that regardless of the vendor, each purchase, if you will, has a $50,000 limit, because that is what I understood would be the case.
I'm sorry, could you repeat that? Is it the vendor you thought it was, or the purchase?
I thought it was, I'm sorry, I misspoke. It's whatever we're, like if we have a vendor and we're buying A, there's a 50,000 limit for A. If we use a different vendor and we're buying B, okay, 50,000. Go back to vendor A, you're buying C, 50,000 limit. And either way, by default, wouldn't it just end up coming before the board anyway? Because if it were by firm, we have already exceeded that 50,000 first. But we should know for each one.
Yeah, I think the thing that's unique, because you are talking about the firm, you know, Brown DeBresta, is that they have a retainer,
correct,
which is separate from this.
Yes.
Okay, that's totally separate.
From active lawsuits, which cannot fall under a retainer.
Exactly. Exactly. And so then beyond that, I think that there's a $50,000 limit. You begin to subtract from that, you know, as the invoices come in.
That still doesn't answer.
I know.
That doesn't answer my question. Did you have a comment?
Well, I agree with what's been described, is that it's not per vendor, but per invoice. And they're going to be invoiced separately, I would hope, because that's the method we have for tracking and watching what we're spending on things like loss, litigation, or negotiation. And while at first blush it may feel like we are less transparent, or to give you more more authority, I believe in the long run it's more transparent, because we are seeing each separate
right.
Case or negotiation or lawsuit in its entirety, rather than having it all lumped together.
Okay, perhaps I'm being dense, but I'm going to go here one more time. You are saying per invoice. So I don't know how, and I'm specifically speaking of Ms. DeGresta's firm and being paid for two lawsuits, separate lawsuits, that she is working on. They did not occur at the same time. They came in at different times. We gave direction as to what we wanted done and what we did not want done. We gave on the second lawsuit too. We gave direction on what we wanted done and what we did not want done. And Ms. DeGresta is good about keeping us up to date, and we got the confidentiality of certain things with that, and I appreciate that. But again, I say, Dr. Adams' authority is not $50,000 for a month of work on an invoice. It is for this lawsuit and for this lawsuit.
That's true.
Okay. Well, Dr. Adams is saying firm, and that's why I'm trying to clarify.
And I would agree. If you have Green versus school district, and they crack $25,000, mm-hmm. and Brown versus school district, and now they've cracked $30,000, you've now gone up to $55,000. They shouldn't have to come back to the board, because it's two separate services per the complainant. Or petitioner.
That's
the
very
way.
Clear.
Right.
Okay.
So I just want to make sure.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Thanks.
So that way we can get bills paid, and we're not sitting here with things in limbo, and we can move forward. I think that was important, and
it is important.
Thank you. That's why I brought it forward.
So just to make sure I understand it, so it's $50,000 per invoice.
No, you're saying invoice. If on the same invoice, there are two cases.
Okay, so it's per, what's the word we're going to use?
Service.
Or litigation.
Case file.
Per case
file.
Case file. Okay. And that gives our accounts payable direction and under Dr. Adams' authority.
That helps.
So. Okay. Thank you all very much. Ms. Disney.
I'll yield to these merger matters.
Okay. Legislative platform. Yay.
Happiness. Happiness.
Yay. It's a happy day. I'll send this in,
I'll send one each way.
Okay.
And as this is going around, I want to thank Mr. Morrison, Dr. Adams, and Mr. Fritz for their help putting this together. Okay. And I do want to take a little time. I sent this out earlier, but there have been changes as we've been moving forward. Which one are you missing? No, I was asking you. Oh, okay.
Oh, are there two sheets?
There are two sheets. Okay. You should have the...
No, I only have one sheet.
Legislative...
I'm sorry.
the draft of the platform and then the snapshot for the school district. Okay?
There are two, Dr.
Okay. Okay. So what we try to do as I've been working on this is to condense this into as few talking points as possible that reflect the priorities of the school district. So I included, as we've done in the past, the guiding principles. For the guiding principles, we look to the Constitution in terms of the authority that the Constitution gives school board members, and also to the value of public education for our state, our community, and our citizens. So those are the guiding principles that inform the advocacy that we're going to be doing for the school district. The first item is around local control, and that's an item that we have seen before. The second item is around adequate funding, and we continue requesting no new mandates, fully funding mandates, and we'll talk about that shortly. Fully funding virtual education courses have been added at the request of the group last time we met, and I included a little comment on the impact that recalibration formulas have, because it really creates havoc with our budgeting process because we don't know, and it also really reduces drastically the FTE that we get per student. And sometimes students are taking virtual classes that we don't even know of until we're billed for them. So that is an important piece to include. And then, you know, the fourth one is one of our usual recommendations, that state revenue be used to provide for continuing the budgets, and as we'll see in the chart on the next page, so that the local taxes are not the main source of funding education. In terms of student learning, we reiterate the importance of adequately funding ESE. And if you look on the second page, that one is very specific. We are funded about $8.8 million. It costs us $14.4 million. So we have to take out of the general budget $5.7 million. So we're making the case that that is not acceptable given all of the things that we have to do for students. With voluntary pre-kindergarten, again, we're asking for the restoration of funding for the full year program to pre-recession levels, and I shared with you the numbers of what we were receiving back in 2007, 2008, and what is budgeted for this fiscal year. The fourth issue is a new issue that we have discussed, and because we've never really had a position as a board on vouchers and choice. And this school district, as all of you know, has been supportive of our homegrown charters and all our charters, as a matter of fact, and we even shared capital dollars with the charter schools. So we understand the value of choice, and our position is nuanced in that we support choice with accountability. We believe that we need to have that accountability for taxpayer dollars. So the two issues that we had discussed in terms of the accountability piece is to ensure that public funds are not spent on voucher programs not required to meet the same academic accountability criteria as public schools. Sadly, our legislature often does not want to see it that way, and that's been, you know, the contention. But if we all talk about accountability, we're not saying we're going to micromanage, but the accountability should be the same. And, for example, a lot of our private schools and some of our children that do receive taxpayer dollars through voucher programs, they take some tests, like the Stanford test. And so what we're challenging the legislature to do is to have everybody be held accountable. Everybody take the Stanford, or everybody take the FCAT, or everybody take the Florida Standards Assessment. But let's have a level playing field so that when we're looking at the success of public schools, at the success of charters, at the success of vouchers, we are looking at the same thing. A perfect example of that is what happens with the VPK funding. There is VPK money that goes to private VPKs, religious VPKs, and public VPKs, but they all use similar flickers, fair, dibbles. They use the same accountability standards. So our argument to our legislators is, you do that already for VPK, let's do it for all our public schools. So it's really about choice with accountability. And then the second piece is, ensure that public funds are not directed to for-profit charter school management companies outside the county or state. Those are taxpayer dollars that are not reinvested in our community and are not reinvested in the state. And if you think about it, public education should not be a platform for profit. You know, it's really about educating kids, and dollars that leave our state and our county to for-profit management companies are not the best way to be stewards of taxpayer dollars. So that one I spent a little more time on because it's new, and I think it's important that we make sure that that is indeed what we would like to reflect to our legislators, with the understanding that this is the collective platform of the board by board majority, but each individual board member can advocate as they see fit. And lastly, I revised the capital outlay and school construction with a lot of conversation with Mr. Morrison, which I greatly appreciated. I modified it to reflect a request to restore the 2.0 capital outlay millage without reducing the operating millage, which is what has happened in the past. That not being possible, we will request our legislators to allow local school boards, through a supermajority vote, the authority to increase capital outlay millage to the original 2.0 we had in 2008. So that's a slight modification. And then I continued with what we had on the previous platform about providing the flexibility to transfer funds under the subsection, I'm sorry, to transfer funds received under this subsection to operating funds for non-capital expenditures deemed critical by those boards. And this is about local control. If a school district has met its capital needs, or if they have some challenges in programs and teacher salaries, they should have the flexibility to use taxpayer dollars as they need to locally. We often, or in the past, we've gotten criticized for some of our capital expenditures, and of course we can't take capital dollars and move them to the operating funds when we need to fund things like the Hope Academy, which we had to cancel, or other programs. We can't say, well, we have money here, we're going to bring it here. That is not possible, and only in very limited instances, I think, with salaries, can we do that with capital dollars. So I wanted to bring forth to you to maintain that statement in our draft. So this is these are the talking points, and at your pleasure, we can talk about this first, and then we can go over page 2, or we can do the entire thing and then take questions and have a discussion.
Do you mind if we do that?
Sure.
I think it'd be easier if we take each page.
Okay.
If you don't mind. So.
Mm-hmm.
Board members.
I have a
couple issues, but the first one would be under the providing flexibility to locally controlled school boards to transfer funds. This question is to the attorney. Is there a Florida statute that does not allow us to do that?
Right now, there is a statute that limits to certain categories capital funds that can be transferred into your operating account. And I believe what this language is trying to do is to have that flexibility broadened so that the use of the transferred capital funds isn't limited. It can be used for whatever the local school board determines to be in its best interest.
Okay. Do you have a follow-up question for that?
No.
Okay, Ms. Simchick.
Well, we have this on the agenda tonight, and on the agenda it said items to follow, so I didn't have this in my backup, and this will be something we'll be voting on tonight. And the new voucher's choice, that I can't support. To ensure public funds are not spent on the voucher programs, obviously with the tax credit, I do support that. And also, I feel that item two is and I understand the sentiment of this, but we already have an existing charter, Imagine School. So by voting for this legislative policy, then we are in essence voting a charter that we have approved not to fund them. And you'll have to explain that to me then. Ensure that public funds are not directed to or for a profit charter school management companies outside of the county or state.
Right.
How would that affect Imagine?
I don't know how it would affect Imagine. I just think that we need to continuously remind our legislators that education is not a for-profit venture. And when you're talking about public education, and that they need to be paying attention to the repercussions of allowing for-profit charter management companies to make money off our students when we have so many schools that need funds to educate students. It's just ethically unacceptable that money is used for profit companies, not for children. And we, I assume all of us, we support children, all children being educated, and there are many charter schools, like our four homegrown charter schools, that are locally run schools. So there's no reason that our legislators should be allowing for-profit. This is only for-profit. Now, we have many for-profits around the nation that are in existence, and the legislature would have to decide how they are going to handle that. And if indeed that is the intent of our legislator, to say, yes, companies can line up at the door, and if you can make money off our kids, go for it. That's their choice.
And although my sentiment might agree with you, as far as futuristically, as a board, if we're advocating and we stand by this, and we actually have within our county a for-profit, if we do not spell out our stand as far as grandfathering those within, we are actually taking an active stand against a charter that's already here. And forget the charter that's out of the county. Those students, we will fail because legislative practices has allowed that. They have made our conditions under their charter. We have approved it. And if we lobby to disperse that, we are taking an active stand against a charter that's in our county and all those students that attend. I understand everything that you said. So I think that that's something that would be, as a school district, I think that that's not, and again, it's just my feeling. Mm-hmm. I can't support those two. So that's, and those are, that's it. You know, I mean, it's a democracy, and publicly I have to say those two I can't support. But everything else I agree with. I think you did a good job.
Thank you.
And
Do we have consensus at least on? I mean, there's four of us seated, so we have consensus on all items except for the voucher's choice, which needs obviously some further discussion. Do we have consensus on everything else?
This is a lot of work. I know I've done it, and you did a great job putting it together. I'm amazed at how concise you were able to be because In the past, we've had such a struggle to shorten things, and you're able to be so concise.
Okay, and if, before we move on, since we have consensus on this, I'm looking at the last line, and I'm going to go back, and I'll do that before the board meeting, where it says under this subsection, I think in the previous platform we had more information, and that under this subsection may not fit. I don't know how you all feel about it.
Okay, you're saying that capital outlay.
Capital is the very last one. Provide for flexibility to the locally controlled school boards to transfer funds received. And I'm here we're talking about the funds received from the taxes to the operating fund. You know, so I'll get with Mr. Morrison and figure out what would be better wording for this under this subsection. Does that make sense? Because to me it seems like it doesn't. Or if you have a suggestion.
I was going to suggest that just put school boards to transfer capital outlay funds to the operating fund. And take out received under this
That's
subsection.
Okay, yeah. Capital.
Just scratch
outlay
this.
Funds.
If you scratch that.
Oh, okay.
Transfer capital outlay funds and then strike received under the subsection and then leave in
okay,
to
so
the operating fund.
So that is the change we will make for tonight's meeting.
Okay. That differentiates your two buckets of money.
Okay, so.
So we have consensus on everything except the vouchers and choice, and we need some further discussion on that. On that mm-hmm. issue.
I think we're going to need it 5 minutes.
Okay. So is Matt coming back? Is Mr.
Matt is supposed to be here. He asked that I move the superintendent's search and timeline to when he came in. He said he's going to. He said he's going to be here.
Okay, so maybe we can take it up then.
So we will. Let's just lay this on the table for the moment, and we will.
Do page
oh,
two.
Oh, yes, I'm so sorry.
That's okay.
I did not mean to dismiss that. I did not.
Okay, and then the rationale for including page two, excuse me, is really when we talk to our legislators, it's really important to have some of those numbers to explain to them why we are making these requests. So because the funding issue is paramount in terms of the challenges we face, it's important to show the trends of our state versus local funding. And even though when you look at the blue columns, there is an increase in state funding, and when you look at the green column, there's a slight decline. Overall, we pay the bulk of the cost of this expense, and it's really important to remind them that, you know, we just can't do it alone. So that really shows you what the trend has been, and, you know, we need to keep in mind that as this trend has happened, the expectations of what we must do have, you can almost say they have increased exponentially, because we're seeing so many more expenses, yet the trend is that we bear the burden, and we often can't, and that's why we had to have a referendum a few years ago. So that is an important piece. In terms of expenditures...
Can I just make a comment about that as well? As a big part of this, you know, is equalization. In other words, once we do pay a greater share because we have greater property values, but what happens then is these dollars then are equalized at the state level so that everybody gets the same thing. In terms of FTE, now there are other parts, the capital outlay and so on, but in terms of student funding, we do pay out more, but and our dollars are equalized, so we don't get the full share of our dollars because they are equalized to support those whose counties have lesser property values and can't support.
If our equalized dollars go out, we do not receive equalized dollars in.
Right. Okay. That's a really...
I'm not sure what you meant by that. We get the same funding per student as any other county.
Yeah, so some of our dollars
are leaving.
That's right.
That's right. That's right.
And we are not receiving any of those quote people.
Okay. And so in terms of what those finances look like, the first column basically has a summary of our expenditures, how we are funded per student, the cost per student, what the average teacher salary is, and I also requested that we also show what the benefits are, because that full package is an expense. But I didn't want it to come across as us saying, well, the average teacher salary is $60,420. Why is anyone complaining? Because that includes benefits. And all other salaries that are comparatively higher or lower also have benefits. But it gives us, it fleshes out the picture of the expense. On the right column, I asked for some of the general operating information in terms of our total balance, our assets, our debt service, and our debt load. And I think that this is important to include because many times when we do things like renovate the cafeterias because your schools have increased in size and the children are eating breakfast at 10 in the morning because there's no room and we have to stagger it, when we make these changes, we often get pushback. And we often get criticism. You guys are not spending money the way you need to spend it. However, this is an investment in our children. And if you look at our debt load compared to our assets, it tells the story of that investment. And, you know, just very briefly, I had an opportunity last weekend to go home to Columbia to visit my family for a wedding. And when I was there, I was asking my relatives and my cousins about what's happening with public education in Columbia. And I had an opportunity on the plane to sit with a guy that knew so much about education. And one of the things that I really came home with was that in countries like Columbia, public education is totally defunded. And if you want to get a good education, you have to go to a private school because the public education is for the poorest of the poor. And the government has recognized that these young kids are part of the future of Colombia, and they're starting to make change. But as I was coming here and I was talking to this gentleman who knew a lot about education, I was saying, you know, sometimes I feel that in the United States, we're not moving forwards like Colombia is, but we're moving backwards because we are slowly defunding and privatizing public education, and I just think what a sadness, because my parents came here exactly for what we got, which was an education, you know. And when I look at this, this is how we invest in our children, and I do hope that this tells that story. So I included that in there because a lot of times we don't have those numbers, you know, at the top of our heads, and we need them. The last section is, this is an ongoing section that, again, I just summarized to the top six with input from the board, Dr. Adams, and Mr. Morrison. We talked about how underfunded ESE, exceptional education, is. We also have talked a lot about technology, and this is what it looks like for the 2013-2014 year, how much we've spent. With gratitude to our taxpayers, because that's where most of that money came from. In terms of transportation, the ongoing struggle of it being unfunded, we added pay for performance, and that includes the budgetary reserve for this fiscal year. Because when we speak to legislators in March, we haven't had to deal with the effect of pay for performance, but we've budgeted it for next year, and that's $680,000 that will come out of our general fund. So that's important to share. And the same thing with the next item, the supplemental academic instruction. Last year, that was not a mandate. This year it is, and it's costing us $300,000 that are not funded. And then in terms of dual enrollment, these are the numbers, again, for this mandate. So these are examples, because many times when I've spoken to Representative Mayfield, she's the one that kind of got us on this track. She said, you know, you guys tell us about so many. Can you tell us what they are? Can you tell us what the impact is? So we listened, and now we tell all our elected officials the story of the impact that their decisions have on us locally. So I hope that this is something that you can also use when you're out and about in the community, telling the story of what we do in public education. So that's it. That's my platform. Yes, Ms. Disney.
Claudia, under finances, where it says federal, what expenditures are you referring to there?
Okay, these are this is money that we get from the government in our budget book. There's
right.
An entire section on federal, and off the top of my head,
I
can't
tell you.
Yeah. Well, that's our revenue.
IDEA.
So that's titled expenditures, though, so I think that might be a little bit confusing there.
Okay, so what would you recommend? How can we?
Well, if we want to maybe move over under general operating, you know, the revenue, because I think it is important to represent how little, how, what a small role federal funding plays in our budget. Because most people think that we receive just gobs and gobs mm-hmm. of money okay. from the federal government. And it is a very small proportion, but it's listed under expenditure, so I think that might
it's be probably hard. What we expend, but it's probably well, close to what we get as well. I mean, we get these dollars, but we it's just like
we spend more
for the
than
FTE, we get it, and we spend
yeah.
more
and
than
that's
we get.
Really the picture is how much we get from the federal government mm-hmm. and what it costs to implement all of the programs
right, and that's
that they require from us. Yeah.
Part
yeah.
of the underfunded, but
yeah,
yeah how can we make that clearer? Because
sure.
this is an expenditure. That's what we expend of the money we get from
yeah.
the federal government. So that is the appropriate column. I don't know, other than expressing some of the items that we get money from the federal that are
yeah.
underfunded down below.
Like
I don't
ESC.
Know. Like ESC. Yeah, I don't know
yeah.
how to further.
Yeah, I don't want. I didn't want to pick on this, but I did want to point
perfect.
That out. That
yeah.
that may be a little confusing, but also the previous draft that you had, we had considered putting the number of students that we serve, and I found that so fascinating because of the number of students we serve that are not traditional students.
Okay.
You know, for instance,
yeah, we can add that.
Yeah.
Okay. So we can maybe under general operating, we just how
mm-hmm.
what would be a good
mm-hmm.
idea for
the head? You mean like student enrollment?
Mm-hmm.
You're talking
student
about? Are you talking about okay. total, or are you talking about?
Well, for instance, the money that we receive for the students with infants shows up in our operating revenue. But and we have expenses associated with
mm-hmm.
those students, but those babies,
right? It's with the babies,
probably $4,000 a year or something.
Okay, so here
and
I
those expenses are not, and those babies are not counted in the numbers that we serve. You know, so it doesn't paint a real.
They are counted in our FTE, mm-hmm. but they are. The moms are not.
Moms.
They are just
yeah.
part of our regular FTE.
Right. Yeah.
So I think this is what Karen is getting at. So we've got this information that the school district provides about school enrollment. We have a number that is for student enrollment that gives us the number of 17,765 children that we serve in K through 12. But the total number of individuals served, including teen parent babies, home-based schooling,
mm-hmm.
pre-K, ESE pre-K, John, the Mackay scholarships, adult ed, is 19,161. And that difference between 19,161 and 17,765 students mm-hmm. is a chunk of money that we very rarely, if ever, account for in terms of telling the story of what the school district does. But I don't know how we get in, you know, how we mm-hmm. represent that.
Well, for adult education, we do get funding for that. That's representing some students. At the home base, I don't see that on there, which is homeschooled, so it shouldn't be in there because we get nothing and we give nothing.
No, but the home base is not just the kids that are homeschooled. There are home-based students where teachers go to their classroom.
That's homebound.
Homebound.
Okay, that would be a different category.
Okay.
Okay. So, but these are the homeschooled.
So home-based is the same thing as homeschooled.
That's correct.
Okay.
Home-based education.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no funding and
right.
no funding out.
Okay. That's correct.
So that's 744 and then 368.
Right, for adult
that
education.
Right.
Yeah, that would come out. And
but that's in this budget.
Yeah.
That's not showing up in this budget?
No. Not home-based.
No. Adult ed.
It shows up in your budget, but not here. It's funded. It's a, you pay for those courses. It's self-funded.
Right.
Yeah. So it shows up as a separate place in your budget, but not blended into your general operating fund, or it's a K can't think of the category right now, but it is a separate piece. Yeah.
So do we want to just add student enrollment? Would that?
I'm getting two shakes over here.
Yes.
So two shakes in yours.
Can't hear the rocks in my head.
We can't.
And the student enrollment reflects the students that we get FTE for. Mm-hmm. These are the students that are enrolled, and we provide services.
If we have revenue in for them or expenses out for them, mm-hmm. they should be included in our. For this picture,
which the McKay scholarships do, and the babies do.
Right. Babies and McKay.
Mm-hmm. Okay. But those are included in that 17,762?
Yes, they are. When you get our enrollment numbers, they are. When we look at FTE, it's included.
Okay. So we'll add student enrollment to that section, mm-hmm. and we'll make that language change on the previous page.
All right. We need to go back to vouchers choice. We're going to wait for Mr. McCain on that. And we're going to wait for Mr. McCain on Ms. Simpson. And it's your turn.
Last month, I had put on the agenda for our discussion mm-hmm. about public input and public dialogue because I found after the last hearing a great need or a gap during our business meeting. For interaction with the public. And so I had brought it up as a discussion item, and it was put out there so that I could hear my peers' opinions and suggestions. One of the suggestions was to have a workshop at another date, but not to change the public meeting format or the business meeting. Although that's healthy and productive, it really doesn't serve the issue for me. So, I'm glad, unless people's opinions have changed, I'm fine with the rest of the board not wanting to change. I understand that I don't have consensus, but I am clearly wanting public input and public dialogue to be expanded during our business meeting. I feel that's the need. It's a give and take. An issue comes up, the public should be able to come to after there has been a discussion from the superintendent on the said project, for example, and we motion and second and have a discussion. Then, like any other legislative meeting, such as the county commission and or city, that anybody from the public want to speak. I would like that interjected into our meetings, but that's really where I have circled around and really come to own. I understand it's not the consensus of the board.
And you're welcome to bring it back, as you did.
So that's about where I'm at. But, if anyone has changed their mind about expanding our business meetings, that's right. Fine.
Yeah, if I recall the conversation, I think the board did embrace that idea of exploring that, and we chose not to do it at that very meeting. I came prepared at that meeting, but I didn't have copies, and I'll send these around. I received this from someone about the procedures for public input that the city council uses. And I, in thinking about the importance of hearing the citizens, I mean, that's why we have input at the beginning, and we have input before an item is to be discussed. So it's really not that the board does not want to hear what people have to say. That's not what we're trying to do. But what we think is important, or at least I think is important, is that when we are getting input, we need to have a conversation as a board as to how to move forward. And the citizens are able, before action item A, if they want to speak, they come up and tell us what their thoughts are and say, can you please support this or can you please not support it? So there is that opportunity for input. 3 minutes is a limit. I'd be happy with, if we wanted to say, let's give people 5 minutes. But I think that in the interest of having a productive meeting, it can't be you speak as long as you need to, in the sense that if you have an argument to make in 3 minutes you should be able to share your talking points. 5 minutes, okay, that works. But I think if it becomes a free-for-all, it's going to be very difficult for us to move forward with our meeting. So I don't think in any way, shape, or form there is an intent and an attempt to limit input. We actually changed it so we could allow people to talk to items. Maybe we could consider allowing people to talk to consent items. That's something that we don't do. And maybe there should be a place for that. If there's something in consent that somebody is concerned about, maybe that could be an option to be more transparent. Now, having said that, I think that the biggest concern is when we give the citizens an opportunity to provide input, I would be very cautious to take the stance that we're going to start having dialogue. Because what happens there is that it can quickly become antagonistic, disrespectful, and just can really hinder the board from doing the business of the board. We do have opportunities when we are at the dais. We do have the opportunity to take a privilege and to speak to someone that speaks during the five-minute input. So there is not a gag order. I mean, we have made progress, you know, that you can't say anything. The superintendent will address things. So I really would like to understand what specifically is your concern around transparency, given that we have 3 minutes of input at the very beginning, we have 3 minutes to address any action item, and we are able to give feedback pretty much at any time if a board member feels that it is really important to do that. I'm trying to understand what else we can do, in your opinion, to be more transparent.
Well, the answer would be to certainly announce and change the structure, that each item could be asked a call to the public. Agenda item number A, the presentation is made. Is there anybody from the public who would like to speak? And that should be done before a motion, because obviously they may deliver some. Let's say we're talking about an environmental lake next to Pelican Island School, and there's scrub jays, and there's issues, and they have to bring scientific data that could change the opinion of the board. It's very important that the public has that opportunity during each item. And so perhaps instead of just somebody not knowing that they have a slip up there that they could fill out, that I just would think that that would be a better place for it. Additionally, and I do agree with the three-minute limit, that's what we have now, I have no problem with that. But you brought up a good point about the consent agenda. There should be, if there's 20 items on a consent agenda that a public wants to do it, that they should be able to request through a board member that they remove the item from the consent agenda for discussion.
That should be done.
How does the public know about that when they come to it? A stranger's never been to our meeting. How would they know about it? Is it on? I didn't see it on the agenda. Our agendas.
Well,
does it say if you wish to remove an item from the consent agenda, notify a board member prior to the meeting starting?
If you came as a stranger and you wanted to speak to an item and you did that at public input before we got into approving consent or anything else, mm-hmm. then I would think if there is a board member who's interested in championing that for you, then they would say, I move approval of the consent agenda with moving a consent item, whatever it is.
So adding that wouldn't be a problem to our agendas on the bottom?
I'm not talking about adding that.
Oh.
I'm talking about a board member who wanted to remove an item could remove an item. I have been contacted about removing an item. I think probably everybody here has been contacted at one time or another from somebody from the public who said, you need to remove consent item, whatever. You know, it's less than $25,000, but that's $25,000 that could be better spent on X. I don't know. I'm just making something up. I don't want to use specifics. So I don't see the need for allowing the public to control our agenda. That kind of governance to me is, you're asking for chaos. I would like to interject now that this is the wrong time for this discussion. I would suggest that your discussion in December after your reorganization meeting is the appropriate time for this.
I think if you move on it now, that you're going to have a discussion again. So I think rather than give direction at this time, I would suggest that you bring your item back again to SimCheck after the reorganization is done.
And I certainly will.
So I would suggest that. And Mr. McCain, you're much anticipated, sir.
And the only thing I would say about what we're doing right now is if the public doesn't know they have to fill something out, I think that's something that we can make sure that
that could
that
be announced prior to the meeting by
each meeting,
yeah.
So that
absolutely.
Somebody's not sitting there.
We'll start that tonight.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I mean, I think that just opens it up for our procedures that we already have and making sure that they know what they
and
are.
And part of your, I think part of your...
So I think that's a good idea.
And I understand your relationship as far as, you know, the county commission is concerned. But you have to remember the county commission starts their meetings at 8 a.m., and you, I think you'd be surprised. I don't know what their average is as to when they end their meetings. If you're going to continue to start your meetings at 6 p.m., I would suggest you would want to modify those accordingly for the amount of time that it is taking at Connect County Commission meetings before every item when they ask for somebody who can. And by very nature of who we are and what we do, I don't want to be like the county commission. I've never wanted to be like the county commission. I don't want to be like the city council in any of our municipalities. This is the school district, and this is an agenda that we've had in place that seems to work well. And there's a tremendous amount of flexibility in there, including under discussion. And you know, there's still that mystique out there about board members aren't allowed to put something on the agenda, which I find quite amusing. But anyway, I think that. That is a discussion, Ms. Sinjic. I would suggest that you do after reorganization. Yes, Ms. Sinjic.
Just some food for thought, too. I would want to encourage the public to bring new information at the last minute to a board meeting and expect a change of vote because board members have no opportunity to verify that information. So I would hope that if somebody has some compelling new information that it comes before
sure.
the board meeting so everybody can hear that information and do their own research to verify. And I think that if we were to change that format, it might encourage that behavior, which would be unfortunate not to have time to do our due diligence.
Yeah, and I think that could result in having to table items and really not move whatever decision forward, because then we're going to have to say, wait a minute, I need to get the other side of that story, talk mm-hmm. to the superintendent, get staff. And so we have to be mindful of the implications of these changes. And I do concur with the chair. You know, in November, we will be reorganizing our board, and that might be the time to make these changes. And I would like to bring this forward then again, because I do think that it would be very helpful on the school board page to have a document that has the procedures so that everybody is aware. And I'm not saying that it has to be this verbatim, but I really like the way they talk about what happens at workshops, what kind of remarks are acceptable or not, and so on. So I do think that, you know, there is work to be done. It's always an opportunity to improve how we do things, but this might be premature to change it, but absolutely early on in the meeting, remind people to fill out the forms in case they have comments they would like
and
to make.
And generally, the chair has done that when we have had contentious items and we have a lot of people, but the fewer people we have, I think that's sort of... And we get fewer and fewer people except the end of the school year. But anything else on this particular item?
Yes. And again, the reason and the timing, and I understand, and yes, the will of the board will change, maybe
absolutely.
Or maybe not. But the thing is that we had a public hearing that was very, I felt, frustrating to
And what? I'm not sure what public hearing you're talking about.
The one for the student
code of conduct,
which was just an example to me where only under that, and we fulfilled the law, were we totally able to allow people to have that give and take back. And that's where I felt that there was, so it sparked a conversation, which is this is the exact forum where we should bring that, and I did. And I wanted to, instead of ending the conversation last month, continue it. But I clearly see that there's, you know, a need to
relook at this at a later date with a different time period. But I'm glad that this is the time that when we have that type of a spark or idea amongst ourselves, that we can bring it here, discuss it. And again, we move as a board in a consensus. And I'm not even thinking about the consent agenda. I have some thoughts on that. So at the later date, I would, you know, welcome that input from.
And let me say, at a public hearing, there is no three-minute rule. Mm-hmm. And at a public hearing, people are encouraged to come up and ask questions. In fact, in past years, we've had to ask people to please stay at the podium so we could answer their questions. So public hearings, I, despite the frustrations of some people when they left, and I do understand some of those frustrations, public hearing, everybody is invited, and there is no three-minute rule. There is no rule. I mean, no time limit whatsoever. Nor is there a time limit as to how many people can come up and speak or how many times they can speak. So, yes, Ms. Disney.
And I shared your frustration at that public hearing. It was really embarrassing, and it left a lot of room for improvement about the way that particular one had been conducted. But I don't think that one should be the snapshot of how we always do business, because we've had many, many town hall meetings and open forums for the public to come where we actually didn't have anybody come. And it was well publicized and noticed and pointed to the topics that people were saying they wanted to talk about. So I just don't think that, I want to make that the snapshot of how things are always done. That one was frustrating, but it wasn't an example of how things are always done.
And I think it will be time to talk about where public discussion can and does take place. It's just giving our public more information so they're not feeling like nobody wants to hear from them, but where in the agenda can do. You know what I mean? So if that's the perception, then we can work with that perception and show them where and when. So.
Okay. Thank you very much, Ms. Inchik. So, Ms. Stang, you're going to note that public input, public dialogue is going to take place at the discussion sessions in December. Did I misspeak?
November.
No, November. You're still going to have, you're not going to have your reorganization.
Oh, I'm sorry.
It's not
right,
until the 18th.
Yeah, October, yes.
Sorry. You still be looking at me in November. Mr. McCain, do you have anything?
No.
Well, now that you're here, we do have something.
We're just
legislative platform.
Y'all take down this without me.
No, we could not do this without
him.
We absolutely could
does
not.
Does he have
I
it?
Assure you.
Okay.
Everybody is in consensus with the legislative platform, except for the new issue, vouchers and choice. And I need to ask you to just take a minute to look at that. And while you're looking at that, I'm going to ask, I'm going to take a point of privilege here, and we will come back to that under your item. Is that okay?
Sure.
Ms. Menes. I'm going to move into new board member orientation, and I'm going to take that one next. And the reason I'm taking that is because there's been a question regarding, I always find it fascinating when there is only two people in a race, and we have races that are done in August, and then you have that huge lag time. So I think that we need to, if I could, ask the board attorney, as far as access to certain things, and I understand that, you know, a board member elect is just that, a board member elect, until they actually are sworn in and take office, and that will not be until November the 18th. When it comes to setting up emails or phone, we've been asked for both of those things. An email address that is separate from their personal addresses, and a phone that gives them access separate from their personal phones. This separates the private and the board business for them. Can you speak to that briefly, if you would, please?
So it's up to the discretion of the school board what they wish to spend money on or to do for a board member elect. The individual does not take office until November, so it's whether the school board wishes to direct the superintendent to make certain things available for a board member elect in addition to the five sitting board members. It's the discretion of the school board. Just please be aware that until the board member takes office, they're not a board member. They are board member elect. I will not share any litigation information that is otherwise confidential with a board member elect. Student information that is confidential should not be shared with anyone. Otherwise confidential personnel information that board members would have access to as a board member may not be shared with a board member elect. So while they're certainly entitled to any public information until they actually take office, they're not entitled to otherwise confidential information. But the expenditure of resources to provide, you know, emails or phones or, you know, that sort of thing is within the discretion of the board of what you'd like to do.
Well, I'm not talking about issuing them a phone. I'm talking about a phone number for them, not necessarily a phone. I just wanted you to know this is not something that's going to be a huge economic impact. Ms. Simchick?
My question that would help me understand whether I would do this or not, and I'm leaning not to, and I'll tell you why, but it'll be based on your answer. Are they subject to the same records request? Public records requests. If we are on a school email address, then every email that they use with our @IndianRiverSchools.org is a public records request.
Public records are defined as any information made or received in the course of the official business of the district. So if that communication is with regard to school district business, it would be subject to a public records request. If it is a communication with regard to don't forget to pick up the milk tonight, that is not a public record subject to a request. And sometimes those communications occur intermittently on a school board-owned computer server. So the milk reminder is not a public record, even though it might reside on the school district server.
But that's for anybody.
Yes.
That's
yes, ma'am. Anybody. Yes, ma'am.
Do you have a follow-up to that or something? A different comment?
It does, as far as email address and phone address, I would hate to see an email from the public be addressed to 5 acting board members and 2 members elect, and now we're getting 7 responses with 7 perceptions or opinions. So if we allow I just think that by law, by the handing of the baton or whatever, whether it was, you know, whatever the position is, there are 5 members, board act members, and 5 board members are on the board. If there is a school address at IndianRiverSchools.org, we will now have 7, or the possibility of 7 people listed, and then you would have a perception of who's elect and who's not, because the public doesn't know when that bell rings, mm-hmm. and that the election and the swearing in came in November 18th. I feel that that's a confusion to the public, and I'm not sure how our attorney would feel defending an answer two different. I just think it's a lot of confusion. Everyone else, I feel that they should have every access possible, but and courteous display as to meeting with people and whatever, but as far as access that a board as an employee and or elected official has, I've never heard of such a thing in any other capacity. I think it's going to add for confusion.
Yeah, and I think the question that I would ask based on your response, mm-hmm. is a board member elect doing the official business of the board?
No, they can take no official action on behalf of the board, but they may receive a communication, for instance, from an employee, as you have, complaining about something or mentioning something, and they may then send that to the superintendent for review and handling. That kind of a communication would be a public record.
And I understand. I your answer to my question is where my concern is.
Okay.
In fact, they are not doing the official business of the board, and my concern would be that even though they're going to be sworn in November, you're creating another layer of bureaucracy there for the community, because even though this person is going to take office in November, you know, any citizen can contact the superintendent, but I think that you'd be starting to kind of cross some lines with expectations that because I'm the elected board member, you need to do this, you need to do this, and we should not allow that confusion to happen just because they, the question is, are they doing the official business of the board? The response is no. Why create another layer of confusion? You know, they're going to be busy enough when they come in, having to, you know, to deal with it. And I can see the pro. The pro is, yes, I will be informed earlier than having to wait until November, and that's wonderful, but there you can still be very informed without having a district phone number and a district email, because people may misconstrue that as being, well, you're doing the job right now, and in effect, you are not working in an official capacity. So it sounds like it's up to the board to decide, and as one board member, I welcome our new board members. I'm excited, you know, for what lies ahead, but I don't think we should put the cart before the horse to benefit the organization and make sure that that member's transition to the school board is not, you know, hindered by any communications before they can actually do anything. Because that, you know, there's an expectation when someone's sending you an email as a board member. Not that you can always do something, you know, but anyway, so I'd be very cautious. I mean, convince me.
I'm not trying to convince anybody. I'm trying to get an answer. That was all. I need consensus. As soon as Ms. Disney finishes, she hasn't spoken yet.
I think that oath of office carries a lot of weight, and that the privilege of having those communications should be after the oath is taken.
Can I just ask a question?
Mm-hmm.
If you don't have an office here, how can you have a phone? I'm just confused.
Well, I think also we were talking about...
I don't have a phone.
Yeah, you do. You have a phone number.
Yes. You can have a phone number that collects messages.
I just never call you on that.
Actually, I think it's saying 11 messages are on your phone. 11 million.
Those 11 messages are going to be there for another 2 years. Because they just, everybody calls. It's just 564-3200.
Okay. We needed an answer for this. I did not want to put Ms. Stang does not need to be the person who's the gatekeeper for this. It's why it needed to come to the board. So Ms. Stang, IT will not be providing any kind of an email, separate address, or phone. So you don't have to. You don't have to consider that anymore because you have the board consensus. Okay. Yes.
Yeah, what I would like to say is that we do need to be providing information regarding, you put a helpful links out there,
mm-hmm.
you know, that had many, many documents that were to help that person, you know, get up to speed. So we want them to be able to access that. And so I think we put it under board members, so I think we'll have to pull it out into more public access.
Yes,
you
but
know,
for our that. Board members, that's already in their packets, the one that Ms. Menes did. That's already in the new board member packets that I did one this morning.
This was the online document.
That's exactly what she did.
Oh. So where is it online?
It was under board member non-confidential matters.
I thought that's where we wanted it.
Yes, but I was saying I pulled that out to highlight it
right.
for when I'm preparing for meetings.
When I went under
the preparing for meetings, this is where you can find those documents.
Yeah. And we're providing that information as well.
And I know, just like today, Ms. DiAgresta got up and gave information so that they could it could be followed as to what we're doing for a board member elect. This was Ms. Stang doesn't need to try and pursue that or make that decision, but to try and move forward with a request. It needed to come here for board direction and for, you know, mm-hmm. board discussion. So that's why we brought it in. Okay. All right, Mr. McCain. Oh, I'm sorry. Ms. Disney?
I'm yielding for all these. You've got a lot of matters or time.
And Ms. Jimenez, you want to do a follow-up? Mr. McCain has had plenty of time, even as slowly as he reads, to... do the vouchers and the choice items.
So basically, we were waiting for you so we could move forward. As you know, the work we do is by consensus, and the board majority moves an item forward. And as we were talking about the legislative platform, it was one board member, Ms. Simchek, expressed that she cannot support the section on vouchers and choice, and the board corporate can decide whether or not they think it appropriate to allow it to remain or to be removed. And I think it would be important for Ms. Simchek to explain her rationale so that you can hear it, and that can inform your decision.
Well, he has his own decision, and the board majority has already spoken.
But I
just want to say that the majority, other than me, first of all, I had expressed that we just got this today, so that was a new item and a surprise to me. So I have, I had a problem with, you know, as I said, it's on the agenda tonight with no backup. This is the backup, and this is the choice that was added, vouchers choice, to ensure that public funds are not spent on voucher programs not required to meet the same academic accountability criteria as the public schools. Particularly, not spelt out here, but the tax credit I support, and therefore, I also know that it is a law. And therefore, I could not, me personally, support that. And the second one, although if we had no non-for-profit charters within our county, if we had no, I just want to be clear, I would say that, if we did not have any for-profits in our county, then I could move forward. But I find it an assault on the imagined school that we do have by moving forward as a legislation to advocate for this, because I feel that I just wouldn't feel it would be proper.
And before you speak, for the record, because I think it's important to be transparent, this item on vouchers and choice was at the meeting. It was in very specific at the meeting
prior
that you were in.
Mm-hmm.
And at that time, you did not express your disagreement. So I just wanted to be on the record that this is not something that was sprung on the board at the last minute. In fact, this language was even greater detail, and actually it was expanded to vouchers, because it's not just the tax credit scholarship, but a lot of other vouchers that are under discussion here. But there was never any intent in any way, shape, or form to mislead the board by adding this at the last minute, which it could be construed as this has not been shown before. It was shown before. So I just think we need to be clear for the record. So
I am being clear. I'm sorry.
Forward.
But did you have the not-for-profit on?
No, that piece
okay.
is new.
Thank you.
But
okay.
the whole voucher piece, mm-hmm. I mean, that was there, and that was included later.
That's fine.
And you all got the email yesterday, and the change continued today. So
correct.
It's a process. We don't meet often enough to continue the process, but that topic has been there since the last time.
Let me ask, and this is an assumption on my mm-hmm. part, we certainly aren't going to go back and tear down a school. So I'm assuming that the word future, ensure that future public funds, that's just a
yeah.
suggestion.
Sure.
So we're not looking at going back and taking away funding for a school that is existing and,
right.
And obviously thriving. But I think if we just maybe add that one word, or future public funds in the future. That's just a suggestion I'm throwing on the table. Mr. McCain, you have any comments on this one?
Sure. But on an overall piece, you know, it's been 6 years now. We've been asking to restore the 2.0, reinstate the funding matrix, adequate funding, low control, 0-6 on everything we've ever asked for. I'm not sure. This is just a political exercise anyway. It means I'm not sure people up there care what we think in Inyo County, to be honest with you. In fact, I'm pretty sure they don't. Love the folks at Imagine. I got a lot of friends out there. I got clients there. I know a lot of the teachers there, whatever. But there are a lot of lousy charter management companies who are making a killing I wish I had thought of it.
Not too late.
You know, and yeah, exactly.
I cannot imagine.
So
charter school. I can only imagine
Mexican hats.
And six periods of PE.
Everybody wear an FSU.
We'd play the what? Yeah. We'd play have a good high school football team. Mm-hmm. I just don't see it as a front to it.
So how about I don't future? Would that work? Ensure that future public funds?
Sure.
Would that be tolerable and fair?
I'm very, I'm comfortable with that. I would hope so, since I said that. But I was trying to think of something that would make it a little more palatable. So I think that you, I think you have consensus moving forward with these two documents this evening. With the clarifications. Do you mind going over the clarifications
yes.
one more time?
I mean, the charter schools get FTE anyway.
Yeah, we.
So
yes,
it's not like.
Us.
Yeah. Yes. I mean.
But we're talking about future public funds
yeah.
be not directed for charter school management companies. In other
right.
words, we need to put the brakes on these for-profit companies.
And that's what it's about.
And that is what it's about.
So the three changes are on that first page, including ensure that future public funds are not directed to for-profit charter school management companies outside the county or state. And then at the very bottom, Matt, where it says capital outlay and school construction, the last sentence will read, provide flexibility to the local controlled school boards to transfer capital outlay funds to the operating fund for non-capital expenditures, and so on. And then on the second page in the financial snapshot. We're going to... I had to do pull-out classes to my SHCH, and I still don't get it. We're going to add student enrollment in under general operating, and it'll be bold and underlined, since that's like a new category. So those are the three changes that will move forward, and they'll be ready tonight.
And there will be a vote. We don't take a vote at discussion sessions. Okay. Ms. Simchick?
Nothing.
Mr. McCain?
No, other than to apologize for being late. I talked to Ms. Johnson yesterday. I had somebody coming in.
I told him. I said he is off playing golf.
I wish the crap I was. I was he's working all weekend, believe me.
So it is my turn again. I think I'm going to deal with the superintendent search timeline. Pass those down, all the way down to Mr. McCain and...
Pass the packet down, please.
Thank you. And there's yours. And there's yours. And I'll save that for... here's an extra one, if you... What I've given you here, and this is not, please understand, I do not expect us to sit here today and come up with this information, to fill in this information. What I'm giving you is the past two superintendent searches, the one on, and their timelines. The one on the top is the one that we did when Dr. LaCava left. What are you missing?
I'm missing the first courses.
She's missing 2010.
She has 2007. And you have 2010.
What is that? I got 2010.
Yeah, both of them. I need the
10. And so
you've got that up instead
all
of
right.
keeping.
I can share.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't need this.
Don't rub it in.
Sorry, you need to take Ms. Stangs back. I'm sorry about that. Hey, I sat here in stableness. We were waiting for Mr. McCain. What can I tell you? The timeline on the top is 2010 for Mr. Dr. LaPalma's replacement. The 2007 timeline is the board changed. There were three new board members elected in 2006. There was an interim superintendent, Dr. Pritchett. And in 2007, in February, the board that had changed tremendously by three new board members decided it was time to move forward, and they felt as though they were comfortable enough to start the search. If you look at the 2010 timeline, ironically, that began in September of 2010. I thought that was interesting. And I would suggest that as soon as possible that we try and schedule a workshop. We could have done that this morning. I mean, we did have our morning open. Mr. McCain, I know, is very thankful that we did not have a workshop this morning. So, but we, if it's all right with the board, there are certain things, I mean, the new board will be in place long after the, it'll be in place in November, and your actual decision about your superintendent qualifications and other things should probably be solidified before then. I would have suggested to Ms. Stang that we invite board member elects to either through the superintendent or directly to Ms. Stang that they give input if they wish, because even though
I am comfortable with facilitating us moving forward. I'm not comfortable with giving any input on qualifications that you're looking for. I'm just not. I just think that's something that you all need to be doing. I will probably break that comment numerous times because I will sit and I will go, well, wait a minute. You all need to probably consider X. Yes.
Can I ask a question? So in that vein, then is the expectation that when we have these conversations, we have input from the board members elect?
No. Board members elect will not be at the table during these conversations. They are not sworn into office. If they sit in, and I would hope they would want to sit in on any workshop we had, mm-hmm. If they sit in, I would hope that they would give any comments directly to the superintendent or to Ms. Stang so that they can be incorporated and sent out to all board members as far as their comments, but that's all they are until they take office. I will tell you that the only thing I will tell you about the timeline is that I would suggest that we move forward with the workshop as soon as possible. You need to decide on how you're going to handle this as far as who's going to do your search for you or if you intend to do it yourself. Which I absolutely would not recommend, but that's just me. See, I already broke my rule. I said on qualifications. No. All right. Sorry, I said that. Anyway, but I think that you probably do need to make certain decisions. If we can't do something during the next school board meeting day, and do we have a workshop that morning, Ms. Stang? Do we have a workshop that morning? Mm-hmm. I don't think we have anything at this point. Is it the 23rd?
28th.
Nothing in the morning or the afternoon. I would suggest that we devote a workshop to that. Yes.
So sorry, that meant afternoon.
I thought it was the 23rd.
Yeah.
It is the 23rd.
Yeah.
So I think we need some board discussion as to when, since the morning and the afternoon are both open, as to when you would like to have some kind of a workshop.
It's September 23rd?
Yes, you'll be out of your project.
I'll still be in the week. That's fine. Yes.
You'll be far along with your project by then.
Yeah, this project was just a project today.
You'll be far along.
I'll still be.
So,
yeah, no, we do it in the afternoon.
Afternoon.
September 23rd, that's fine.
Because then I can roll right in. We can take care of our business instead of traveling back and forth.
Okay. Afternoon, does afternoon work for everybody?
Mm-hmm. And we'll go over calendar then.
Well, you're going to go over calendar. You're going to make a decision on how you want to move forward with a superintendent search. That cannot wait. I would suggest that you not wait until November. From mid-November until the first of the year, you're dead in the water. You're not going to have anything happening. You need to have some ideas to how you're moving forward. You've got to get those brochures ready to go out. All of those things need to be done, and you absolutely cannot wait. And I know that we as a board had a brief discussion about the fact how fortunate we are that maybe this time it'll work for the transition to have a seated superintendent and the possibility of a new superintendent and the benefits opposed to the expense of having an overlap of having those two people for the transition to be a smooth transition. And my hat's off to Dr. Adams. I'll say it again. I'm not ashamed to say it. She made every effort to make that a smooth transition. So I do appreciate, and I appreciate how that was handled, Dr. Adams. She did that with grace. So if we if it's all right with the board, we're going to set an afternoon meeting. Do you want a meeting late, or do you want to do 1 o'clock right after lunch?
1 o'clock's fine.
1 o'clock? Okay. 1 o'clock.
Is that a board meeting day?
Yes. Yes. That's the day we fill up first. You said Tuesdays are ours, no matter what. Okay. Ms. Disney? Still haven't thought of anything, huh? You're still going to defer.
Honestly, it really is to yield to your list.
I appreciate that.
I just wanted to make a comment. I do have the information sheets that are still being worked on for the Moonshot Moment and for the performance pay that Mr. Fritz has provided. I just need to finalize them. So when those are ready, those are just supporting
for the platform. I will just make sure Ms. Bain sends everybody a copy. I forgot to mention that. Thank you very much. Okay. Does anyone have anything else, or can I just go through these lists instead of going around Robin each time? Does anybody have anything else to bring?
As long as you do committee reports.
That's after I finish all my stuff. And I apologize, but this is stuff that we need to get accomplished. And I think we've touched on it, board availability on meeting days. And I think probably the consensus of this group is that we would like to, as we always have, we're going to fill up our board meeting days first, but we'd start in the afternoon. And if we don't have to, we won't add anything in the mornings. But I will throw you a comment of caution. Anytime there's a change in a board, whether it's one person, two persons, or three persons, you're going to have lots of workshops, because the board consensus, I promise you, is going to change on many matters. Some matters it's going to stay the same, but on many matters, as it should, is going to change. So board availability on meeting days, I don't want to assume, is it the consensus of the board that that's what we will do? We'll go with board meeting days first and afternoons first, followed by mornings is the last opportunity. And going to the off Tuesdays if you have to, but you can do that after September. I'm sorry, after November. The walkthrough for the new clinic, and I'm going to give an editorial comment here. Just as we did on the 66th Avenue property, everybody in this building was calling it the Storm Grove property. It is not the Storm Grove property. We finally have staff not saying that anymore. I'm pleased to hear. That is 66th Avenue property, and Storm Grove happens to take up a very small portion of that property. Same thing with the new clinic. It was my understanding that everything we have had come before us, including our workshops, said Wellness Center. So if we are looking at a different way of branding that building, I think we probably need to have a very brief discussion on that as we set the walkthrough. Don't we already have the walkthrough scheduled for 9:30 on
September 29th?
September 29th.
So it's called the Wellness.
That's what it's. Our information says Wellness Center.
Wellness Center.
So
it's not walkthrough.
It's walkthrough for the new Wellness Center. Okay. And we need to make certain, Dr. Adams, that's your charge, to make certain that your staff no longer calls it. You did such a good job with the 66th Avenue property. If you do a good job with the building,
do it.
Okay?
He's the president.
Right? If they call it the Lateral A property, it would sound like much Yankees.
I like that. Yeah, I like that, Mr. McCain.
Sound like a Yankee candidate here at 66th Avenue.
I'm just curious about King's why a Monday was chosen instead of a Tuesday when we're already...
Okay.
I think that's the opening date. They were trying to do the ribbon cutting. It's a ribbon cutting ceremony.
The question
and
was
it's going to open that day.
That day.
Okay. Yes.
Okay. That explains it. Thank you very much. If we could, I'd like to skip down to the Indian River County invitation to join the lawsuit against the City of Vero Beach Utilities. And I'm actually going to be lazy and hand this off to Ms. DiAgresta, who sent us the information that she received. So, you want to talk about the request for us to join the lawsuit? Or do you want to ask Dr. Adams to talk about it?
We at a board meeting, already talked about whether or not the board wished to join the lawsuit, and the board indicated its consensus. It was my understanding that Dr. Adams would be bringing some possible impacts with regard to this electrical utility. I can't speak at the moment.
We have that in
so I have a few pieces of information.
That's all right. I just thought I'd start with you.
Thank you.
We do, and this is these
to
are
the
just facts. We do have 48 students that attend our schools and Charter High out of Indian River Shores. Okay, so we do have 48 students that live within those boundaries that attend our schools. We also pay out about $2.2 million to Vero Utilities. Just to give you an idea of the sites, adult education, alternative ed, the attendance office, Beachland, the district office, including the parking lot lights in the Chiller, Gifford Middle, Rosewood, and Vero Beach High School. And Vero Beach High School, of the $2 million, is $1.2 million. Okay, of the 2.2, it's 1.2 of that. Having said that, providing that information, as we've talked about it in staff, what we would like to do is attend the meetings. We are not coming with any kind of a recommendation to join the litigation, but we do think it's to all of our best interest to be available and to be at the meetings. So we have even designated that Mr. Scott Sanders of Facilities could be the person, and he's agreed to attend these meetings to keep the board and staff informed about it.
Okay. Board members, we need some discussion. Ms. Venture?
I agree.
I agree with that. Okay.
Very good. We have consensus. Next item is the evaluation instrument. Oops. Dr. Adams, you have the. What will we bring back to this meeting?
You've already approved the instrument that I gave you regarding my goals. This was.
Ms. Stang, what were we bringing back for this one? Timeline?
This was an opportunity for the board to put the final, for each board member to make a final decision on what their outcome was of their own evaluation, instead of the chairman having to come up with that figure.
So the chairman is no longer doing the final?
Oh, no, no. No, each board member, you had asked, and the board members had agreed to that.
Did you have a handout?
She has a timeline. I don't remember that.
Yeah, that's what she showed me, was the timeline.
For some reason, I had evaluation instrument, and is there anything the board feels as though is not complete, or that the superintendent feels is not complete moving forward on goals, evaluation, and timeline?
The one part of it was approved at a board meeting.
Right.
This was some, like you were bringing forward some question on the professional, there's the professional competencies part of that that you evaluate. And it was with regard to the matrix. Was there any change in the matrix that you wanted to make?
I was just expecting to see a final draft of how it was going to look with that change in putting the composite up at the top, instead of having only the matrix. We were going to have on the top portion
just like I put on mine.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
I mean, if that's what you want, then I think that's what we can do, and we'll just give it to you to review, and you can give us feedback.
I think we would all be more comfortable with a whole packet, and I think that's
Mrs. Stang. Yeah. Do you understand what they?
So we want a whole packet.
Okay.
The timeline is already set, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, you can include that with the packet.
That would be included with the packet. I don't see anything else. Did I miss something on here? No, I think we've got it all. Okay. Is there anything else that any board member has before we move on to board committee reports?
Yes, I do. I just wanted to bring it up. Today on the agenda, we are approving the school year calendar, the assessment calendar for the school district. And I took the time to print out a calendar and highlight all of the district assessments, and kudos to the superintendent. We've gone from 3 benchmarks for every grade level in math and reading to 2. I think it's the baseline that was dropped, and then there are some that are optional, which I think is wonderful. I also got online and downloaded the Florida statewide assessment form. And once again, when you map out all the tests, there's only one month, which is November, when the only test that's being given is the ACT. And that's not for all students. But the point being that every month our kids are in school, there is some child in K through 12 being tested. And, that interferes with learning. It interferes with the function of the school, because the school has to be quiet for those tests to be successful.
And, you know, I just ask the question for future. It doesn't have to be today. But for our staff to think, are all of these tests necessary? I couldn't find enough space to put in some of these tests because there are so many concurrently being given. And then when you look at our third graders get slammed with testing more than any other grade. So, you know, I just think we have to ask ourselves, you know, as a result of what happened at the Florida School Board Association meeting, all of you followed what happened with Lee County, the discussions that Brevard County is having. You know, it's time that we stop and ask ourselves, what of this is needed? And, you know, today when we're at the meeting, I am going to ask for clarification so that all of these tests that are local, we identify what is district-based versus what is state mandated, directly or indirectly, because some of these tests are not spelled out directly, but they are indirectly required, is my understanding. So, you know, I think at some point we should have that conversation, and maybe we wait until November to talk about and to have staff explain to us and our superintendent explain to us why we test so much. And it's not just us. I mean, all school districts do it. But, you know, I just, again, I didn't support it last year. I had a problem with it. I still have a problem with it. I support accountability. But the number of tests is staggering, and it can't be good for kids. And you can't teach when you're testing.
So, Dr. Adams?
Well, I think you need to differentiate between the local and the state. And actually, we're at a point where the state far exceeds what you do, you know, locally. And I think the crescendo out there now publicly is that we're testing our kids too much. And I don't think anybody on the board has ever argued that. The reality of it is it's mandated, and teacher evaluation is totally, and performance pay is totally locked into this politically. So my hope is that there's statewide and nationwide that there's a lot of discussion that might impact, you know, our legislators. As far as local assessments, we've worked really hard to narrow what we do. Do we need to progress monitor our students? And the answer is yes, we do. And let's just use this year as an example. We have new standards that students are going to be assessed on. We have an assessment that they have never been assessed on. So for a student to be being taught the new standards, even a teacher right now doesn't know exactly what that looks like. So if you have a benchmark assessed that is testing at the standard level, that gives the teacher feedback about where we are. Best practice is to use a lot of the things that you're already using. We're moving toward formative assessment, which means that you can have common assessments in your schools by which you can measure. But it's got to be at the level of the standards. It's got to be at the rigor of the standards that they're going to be assessed on. Right now, we give a lot of tests in classes, but are those tests from class to class similar, or are they written to the level of the standards? So right now, the progress monitoring is an important piece for our students and our teachers so that we can monitor where they are in terms of how they're going to be assessed. We've worked really hard to reduce the number. They are assessed twice throughout the year in reading and in math. We've made science optional. The interesting thing is teachers have asked for it because they want some data that gives them some direction. Civics is optional, and U.S. history is optional. So we actually have some assessments out there for them to take, but it's optional as to whether they do it or not. Right now, with the Florida standards and the math and the English language arts, those benchmarks are actually new benchmarks that are coming out because they're at a new standard. So do we need some benchmarking? Yes, we do. And it's more important right now, moving forward with all the new things that we have. We are working on formative assessments, which is done at the school site rather than the district having to determine when it's going to happen, but we're not there yet. So I give credit to the staff for narrowing the number and of local assessments, but it's my opinion that we need them as well.
More comments? Yeah, I just wanted to add the comment because, for example, you have a test like the Stanford test that measures student progress, and thank goodness you can't prepare for that test. And you know, when you look at all this testing, it's like if we had a tool that we could use, we wouldn't have to be giving all these tests to make sure we're ready for the test. We'd be teaching, we'd have highly effective staff, we've had the curriculum we need, and we test at the end of the year or whenever needed. But this is just, it's just so many tests. But I hear your point. I understand with it being tied to teacher salaries and teaching to an unknown test, we're desperate for some progress monitoring, especially to put people at ease. But, you know, that's the larger conversation, and I think that's where our opportunity is to talk to our legislators, to be a united voice, and, you know, it's like hashtag same test for everybody. Yeah. And that way we don't have to spend millions of dollars literally on tests that could be used for teachers and programs. So.
And I'd like to speak a little bit to the fact that originally the Common Core was designed so that everybody across the United States would have a similar curriculum, and we could do a comparison of, well, how is Florida doing compared to other states? Well, now what's happened is they're using different assessments in different states. So we have spent a lot of time and energy on something that has not come to fruition, and now Florida has tweaked the standards to the Florida standards, and they are using a totally different assessment than anybody else is using. So there's a lot of frustration out there, and people are getting frustrated, and we're there with you. But that's where it is right now.
Okay. All right. Board committee reports. Mr. McCain.
EMZ, I don't know, nothing that would take up y'all's time. Okay. Nothing that concerns us.
That's what we need.
People yelling at each other.
That's interesting.
Well, I'll bring y'all up to date about last week. The Florida School Board Association Board of Directors meeting was here last Friday. The 2 days leading up to that, Wednesday we had the committee chairs here doing the plan of work and really sitting down and looking at the strengths and weaknesses of the organization, what resources they would need, and taking it from thought to speech to paper so that that the committee chairs can get some work started right away. Thursday, we had 5 speakers. We had a speaker, Barbara Hammond, speaking from the community partnership point of view. We had Lindsay Matheny speaking from the leadership in the classroom. And we had Cynthia Villardo from Education Foundation speaking about being a parent advocate. In the afternoon, Michael Stutzke talked about leadership in athletics. And the final speaker was Beth from National School Board Association. She's the State Association President of Carolina. And I highly suggest that if you all have not heard Barbara Hammond speak about the moonshot moment specifically, but the genesis of the Learning Alliance, I think it's really impactful to hear her story about being a parent of a child who couldn't read and how it all came to pass with the meeting with the superintendent to where we are now. The gains these students are making in reading are significant, and I think it's because when you look at kids who can't read, they just don't self-identify, and parents are often looking at other things that may be going on in the house, and so it's not readily apparent that a young child is not learning to read, and that the techniques they're using are designed to grab those kids, even if we don't know that they're struggling readers. The techniques they're using to teach reading will grab those kids and sort of scoop them up and bring them along, and I think that is an important story to hear. She tells it not quite at a level of academia and not quite at the level of a parent or community member. It's sort of somewhere in between, so it's really at the level of the board member, I think. And while some of it gets really into the curriculum, which we don't as board members, seeing what the changes in the way it's taught impacts our budget and impacts the way we look at our teachers, I think, gives us an insight as a board member that we all could use. And I certainly enjoyed her presentation. She could have gone on for another hour, she told me. We did limit it to an hour and 15, but she's so passionate and excited about what she's doing that she just brought us all on that journey with her. After all of our speakers spoke, we had the committee chairs present to the entire board of directors what their plan of work is, and Claudia did a really wonderful job. Claudia can tell you at another time what her committee is, but both she and her vice chair, it was like we went to church. they really had a dynamic presentation that that hit close to home. The following day was our board meeting, and the two big issues at the board meeting were the opt-out discussion. We had that conversation because of the two board meetings that Lee County Schools had had, and the board member that brought that forward brought it in two parts. Her first part talked about let's urge the legislature to let parents have the option of opting out of these high stakes tests. And the second part dealt with the what kind of testing is good. Well, in a paraphrasing it, they were supporting diagnostic testing. So naturally, the first part of that piece, everyone really had no problem with that. To that parents should have the choice to opt out. It was the second part that was causing a lot of distress because some folks are really strong on the accountability piece, and other folks are so upset about how many tests that kids are getting. We had really struggled on the wordsmithing of the second part of it. So as a result, it was tabled until the next meeting. The other conversation we had was about the lawsuit about with corporate tax credit scholarships. I was not at the meeting where they had the first conversation. I was here in the district. And I wanted to hear what people were, what their concerns, what their issues were, how they were, what they were saying in support and what they were saying against. And it was there was an opportunity for a new motion to be made, and none came forward. So we had a quite a lengthy meeting. Normally we're gone before noon, but this was a longer meeting that encouraged a lot of conversation, a lot of reaching down deep and trying to figure out, are we fulfilling our mission? Because our mission is to educate board members so that they will be more effective academic leaders, to help students with academic success. So it was really good conversation, and I was proud to have them all here in Vero Beach.
I wanted to mention that Barbara Hammond and Liz Woody were featured on PBS, mm-hmm. and it talked about the story, and it was very compelling, and the school district is being part of it. It was very well done.
Yeah, my mom called me. She was in she's in New York, and she called me first thing in the morning to tell me about this thing that she. And I was like, yeah, that's what we're doing. That's our moonshot moment. So she was, and I mentioned that to Barbara in the morning. I have just two brief reports. I went to the Connected for Kids meeting. Our directory will be published soon. And one of the things we talked about at the meeting was asking the superintendent if there was any way at a once we know when they're ready, if we could distribute them at a principal's meeting, just give whatever principals are there, just very briefly.
Sure.
This is the directory, because I think that creates a different energy versus dropping it off at the school and it gets stuck in an office somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
So we can follow up on that. But that was one of the conversations we have. We talked again about the Kids at Hope program. Leslie Spurlock was there and gave us an update on that. And then Amy McPartland, who is the administrative assistant for the executive roundtable, came to our meeting. We are the advisory committee for the executive roundtable around children's issues, so she's going to be attending the meetings for Connected for Kids. So we had a really productive meeting, and then I just wanted to give another perspective on the FSBA board meeting. Our district was so well represented. All of the speakers were wonderful. Mr. Studsky was amazing. I've never heard him speak. He did such a wonderful job, and I just left there thinking, you know, we are doing some good things in the community, and we have good support, we have good partners. So that's why I'm so excited, you know, looking forward. There's so much work to do, and we've got a great foundation. And needless to say, Karen did an outstanding job hosting and facilitating. It was very impressive. You know, legislative bodies rarely, when they meet around contentious issues, keep it civil. And Karen facilitated a very intense conversation around the tax credit scholarships and around the opt-out, where you had people on both sides that were very passionate, but everybody has the same goal, and I was just very impressed with the work Karen did, and I was just very proud to be there. So it was a great experience. I learned a lot, and I picked up a handout that was presented by the National School Board Association Southern Region Rep, who spoke, and it's for school board members, and I thought it might be appropriate to copy it for all the board members, including the packet for the new school board members, because it talks a little bit about the roles of school board members, and I thought it would be helpful.
Do you mind trusting me with that?
Sure.
Just need to write out.
It might be up on the website. I wanted to keep your notes.
I can print out a clean one because I've
used it. Okay. I'll make certain that it goes to the two board member elect, and then I'll make certain it goes to everybody's boxes. So you'll just give me one.
And one of the things that impressed me about our speakers is they were not there to be complimentary of the district. They were there to tell their story. Mm-hmm. And they shared they were very honest about things that worked and didn't work for them. So I thought that was really powerful. And, mm-hmm. you know, I thought that was a really great aspect of it.
Yeah.
So, okay, so that's really good.
Chairman has, did I copy you all regarding the Harmony development on the, I thought I did already, and ask you please do not respond. But that development is quite large, but it is not going to affect us. It is 55 plus community, and the covenant is specific. There's no wiggle room in there. At least one person in the household has to be 55 or 100. That does not mean there could not be children, but it is highly unlikely. That's not the focus of this, nor is it the price point for a family. So, and the planning and zoning is all that I have.
Okay. All right. Dr. Adams, do you have any items or anything?
No, I don't. We're going to meet again at 3:15 here.
We're going to
start.
At 3:15, we will be up there. We will recess for our litigation. We leave the building. Leave the room. Yeah, we can leave the building if we want to.
We
go into Dr. Adams' office for litigation. We come back, and we have to come back to restart and recess the meeting.
We'll start here, leave,
correct.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes,
all right.
Meeting adjourned.
I emailed
Michael.